coming up on New York Now.
A yes vote gives a green light to fraud on a scale that New York has never seen.
Bills on climate change, protections for farm workers, and allowing undocumented immigrants to obtain a driver's license pass in Albany.
We are talking about that same old trope my colleagues across the aisle have always throw out when they want to scare people. There might be voter fraud, even though there has not been voter fraud.
But what was left on the cutting room floor, we'll analyze at an expanded reporters roundtable.
He pushed to try to allow women to be paid to carry a gay or infertile couple's baby to term. New York does not allow that. It didn't end up happening in part because of pushback from women in the assembly who didn't like that bill.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. The state legislative session ends a little bit late and with an innovation known as the Slim Ugly.
First up today, bills we've been talking about for most of 2019 get a vote inside the Capitol. One of the most controversial pieces of legislation that's been debated for months now is whether to allow undocumented immigrants to obtain a standard driver's license. After having already passed the assembly, all eyes were on the Senate. And this week, they secured the votes to approve it. Six Long Island Democrats voted no, but with a large majority, the party was able to muster enough support to pass it 33-29. Here's some of the floor debates.
The major problem with your legislation, and there are so many, really boils down to the issue of identity, not licenses. Instead of the green light bill, this measure should be called the Sanctuary State ID Bill. That's precisely what you'll be green lighting, New York becoming a sanctuary state. Moreover, in the process, you'll be giving out hundreds of thousands of IDs without knowing for certain the true identity of the individuals who received them. A yes vote gives a green light to fraud on a scale that New York has never seen. A yes vote gives a green light to New York becoming a sanctuary state. A yes vote gives a green light to identities being given out that could be misused. These IDs will be used for voting, free college, and so many other benefits paid for by hardworking, law-abiding taxpayers. You'll be establishing a system where it will be nearly impossible for county clerks' offices to verify someone truly is who they say they are.
We are talking about that same old trope my colleagues across the aisle have always throw out when they want to scare people. There might be voter fraud, even though there has not been voter fraud that is demonstrable in this country. It is the same old excuse used to keep people down that has been used on issue after issue after issue, and frankly, I am sick of it. The fact is, people who are not citizens do get licenses today if they have green cards, if they're TPS holders or DACA recipients. They have driver's licenses. They're not running around organizing some massive voter fraud operation. The fact is that people who are here undocumented are scared to do anything illegal. They are hiding in the shadows today, and we are trying to help them come out of the shadows. So some notion of a grand conspiracy, they're all going to meet up somewhere and cast votes in some organized fashion and break the law explicitly, risk getting deported, risk going to jail, is absolutely ridiculous.
Also getting approved, legislation dubbed the Farm Workers Bill of Rights. Among other things, it allows workers' compensation, unemployment benefits, 24 consecutive hours of rest each week, and a measure requiring overtime pay. Republicans in the Senate expressed concerns about New York farmers being unable to afford the new requirements.
The fact of the matter is when our farms are struggling, and they are already struggling, minimum wage continues to kick in. This bill will be a pile-on to minimum wage. The dairy sector in New York State, if you have any dairy farms, and there are people on both sides of the aisle that have dairy farms in their district, there are people on both sides of the aisle that have many farms in their district. This is bad for your constituents. It's bad for your local economy. This, in my view, I remember when the majority took office and they said, we are here to represent the whole state. This bill, I'm sorry today, folks, says very differently. There are people that I represent that when they see a bill like this being pushed by, I'm sure, a well-intentioned legislator who represents four farms, according to the USDA, four, on an upstate economic driver, they're going to see this as an attack from New York City on the rest of the state, and particularly upstate. That is how it will be viewed. And that's, quite frankly, how I view it.
I find it completely and utterly serendipitous that we're voting on the Farm Workers Fair Labor Practices Act on Juneteenth. As was mentioned previously, it's a celebration, a commemoration of when the Union Army marched into Texas to let the last group of slaves know that they were indeed free. It took 6 months. And today, we're letting farm workers know in New York State that they're finally recognized as human beings under the labor law, and they are entitled to the very same protections and benefits that every other worker in New York is given.
And finally, one more big ticket item that died and was resurrected a few times, the Climate and Community Protection Act. It finally cleared the Senate Wednesday. Democrats are calling it the most comprehensive and aggressive bill addressing the issue in the nation, lowering greenhouse gases and diverting New York's energy reliance to renewable sources. Many Republicans supported some of the ideas in the legislation, but not the bill itself.
The earth has been warming for 11,000 years. Now, is it true that the more greenhouse gas you have in the environment, the warmer it gets? Yeah. Is what we are doing on Earth exacerbating or quickening the warming trend? It makes plenty of sense that that is what, that is possible and that that is what is happening. But scientists will tell you that the climate change, the global climate change, these warming and ice ages that have occurred for millennia, have more to do with variations in the Earth's orbit, have more to do with what is known as the Earth's precession. The Earth, as we know, rotates off axis. That's why we have seasons. The Earth, as we know, also wobbles in 26,000 year periods. And scientists have now proven that it is the precession, it is the variation of our orbit, and it is the tectonics and the movement of our continental plates that have more to do with these trends than anything else. And yes, one of the manifestations of these climate changes is you see changes in the greenhouse gas in our atmosphere.
We're not smart enough to have this conversation on the floor of the Senate. When I just listened to what I just listened to, no, sir, it is not just the pattern of history going back and forth and back and forth. Climate scientists universally across the entire globe have told us that we are in a moment of epic crisis for the planet. So we can pretend we would know what to do if we took another 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years to discuss things on this floor, but we don't have enough time to go to school to learn all the things they already know. So with all due respect, this is the worst drivel I've ever heard on this floor, as we are in a crisis. You can bury your heads in the sand. You can say, I don't know if I like the bill. I don't want to give away our power to scientists or bureaucrats. I need somebody to come up with the answers before you all die and your children die and your grandchildren die. So, no, I don't care. We have to act now This bill isn't saying exactly what we're going to do between now and 2050. This bill is saying we better damn well start doing something fast.
Was this a successful legislative session? We want to know what you think in our poll question. Let us know at nynow.org.
The last two abandonments have been, I think, $2.5 million and $1.2 million for localities. One happening upstate in a community with a really high poverty rate, hardly larger than their entire town budget. How a municipality is expected to absorb that, it's really, you can't fathom it.
Last week's feature story focused on how abandoned cemeteries are causing fiscal problems for local towns. And we asked you if more money should be given in the annual state budget. And two-thirds said yes. Daniel in Rochester, watching on WXXI, voted no, saying the state already has enough obligations. That money is better spent on fixing our bridges. Linda in New York City, also a no, watching on WNET, said cemeteries are obsolete, but she said some are historical and could be funded. And finally, Craig, north of Albany, voted yes. Someone has to step up and care for those we have lost. Thanks so much to all those who voted, and you can do so this week by heading to nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS.
On the website, you'll find a link to my paper's Capital Confidential blog, a must-read, especially as session is wrapping up. You can also find it at timesunion.com. All right, and now we're at the Reporters Roundtable, where Matt and I are happy to be joined by John Campbell of the USA Today Network. All right, gentlemen, so much to talk about. But let's talk about what happened on Thursday night into Friday morning, which is the passage of what was minted by, I believe, our friend Jimmy Vielkind as a slim ugly, an omnibus measure that is a little bit smaller than the standard big ugly. What's in it, John?
Oh, all sorts of stuff, isn't it? I mean, it was looking for a while, you know, the idea of a quote-unquote big ugly where you can't get people to vote for this or that, so you pair everything together, so then you cobble together enough votes and you have all sorts of disparate measures in there. You had all sorts of stuff in that last night. You had a measure allowing Governor Cuomo to appoint his top staff members to the MTA board without living in the MTA region, which that had some level of uneasiness to it, but the Senate and the Assembly passed it. You had
that clears the way for Robert Mojica, the current budget director, to join the MTA board.
Yep. You had a lot of you had more than $1 billion in various spending initiatives, capital programs. You had a giant VLT facility, video lottery terminal facility, essentially a gambling hall. Approved for Orange County near Woodbury Common. And you had any number of things. You had changes to the STAR program. You had little tweaks to bills that had been passed earlier in the year, like congestion pricing. And it all came together, and lawmakers voted on it late last night, early this morning, and then they left town.
The VLT was a bit of a surprise to me, John. How did that come about?
So you had Resorts World Catskills is the casino in the Hudson Valley. They also owned Monticello Raceway, which was a video lottery terminal, a racino in Orange County. That has shut down, and they're looking to move it to Woodbury Common, which is a big outlet shopping facility. So they're moving it near there. They needed approval to do that, though, because up until now, these types of video lottery terminal facilities were only at racetracks.
Right.
They were added there. So they needed some approval from the legislature. They got that by adding it to the quote-unquote slim ugly and getting approval that way.
There were also some last-minute fixes that had to be done. A legislation that perhaps was passed in haste, as a lot of legislation, unfortunately, is at the end of the session. Most notably, the Senate pulling back a measure that would have automatically registered people to vote if they were getting driver's licenses. This, of course, was caught up in the passage a couple of days earlier of the Green Light Bill, which makes undocumented immigrants eligible to get driver's licenses. Nicole Malliotakis was one of the lawmakers who noticed, whoa, hold on, the automatic voter registration could have had the effect of registering those people to vote as well.
Yeah, the Green Light Bill, one of the major, major debates from Republicans was whether or not it would allow undocumented immigrants to register to vote. And the answer for that is no, it wouldn't, because you still have to certify that you're a citizen and that you are eligible to vote. And if you certify that and you're not, you face a big fine.
It's a felony.
You face a big fine, you face jail time, and if you get caught for that, you would face deportation. So that was a major debate during that bill. Then you have this other bill, the automatic voter registration bill, that the Senate did pass yesterday before realizing that issue.
Technical error.
They called it a technical error. That's a pretty big technical error. So the Senate withdrew that bill after they voted on it. I don't believe the Assembly had passed it at that point. And they said, we'll figure this out. We'll come back next year and pass it. It didn't really matter because it wasn't going to take effect till 2021, they say. But it was that's embarrassing.
Well, and more catnip for the Republicans, because during that green light bill, what did we hear from so many? Daphne Jordan, who we just saw a few moments ago, and others talking about not only is this going to make New York a sanctuary state, but we're going to see voter fraud, which, again, as you saw Mike Gianaris push back, you know, there isn't this mass voter fraud. But it's certainly going to raise some eyebrows. Yeah.
Pulling back a little bit, looking at the other legislation that was passed over the course of the past week, the final week of session, major legislation to fight climate change that is going to be affecting New York. I mean, climate change is going to be affecting us for a long time, but the legislation is supposed to play out over the course of the next three decades plus.
Yep. So the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, it was passed by both houses. Governor Cuomo has pledged to sign it into law. The biggest piece of it is that it is a pledge to get to net zero emissions by 2050. That's from 1990 levels. So there's been a little bit of progress made there. But the idea is that you would have you would reduce your emissions all throughout the economy in New York by 85%, and then have the other 15% offset by various projects that offset climate emissions. It is a big goal. It is one of the most aggressive, if not the most aggressive, in the country. But the criticism that you've heard from Republicans and some business groups is that it leaves a lot of decision making to this new 22-member panel, which does not exist yet. And will be appointed by the governor and legislative leaders, and it'll include all sorts of state agency heads, and they are left to come up with a scoping plan to figure out how to do that. So there are a lot of unanswered questions about what kind of practical impacts it may have on New Yorkers, and certainly power plants, that's a big deal, because there are aggressive goals there to reduce emissions and increase renewable energy in power plants. But we're not quite sure how it's all going to be implemented until this council gets rolling.
We heard multiple Republicans on the floor talking about, listen, this is why we're elected, to make these decisions. Mm-hmm. Why should we be pushing this on, the word they use, all these bureaucrats? Mm-hmm. We heard that from many Republicans, and it's a fair argument, but it's not like this hasn't been done before in New York.
Well, and it's also the opposite argument of that. The pushback to that would be, they're not climatologists,
right. Liz Krueger said that.
Right, so it's the idea is that you get this panel with various levels of expertise from throughout different industries and different practices, and let them figure out what's going on. But there's a lot of delegation there that a lot of Republicans weren't comfortable with.
There was also the further decriminalization, not full decriminalization, of marijuana, low-level marijuana offenses, as well as adopting a much tougher standard for sexual harassment. These were also very big wins that were on the progressive agenda for a long time, although the legalization of recreational adult-use marijuana remained elusive.
Yeah, that was the decriminalization bill was a win on some level, but the legalization advocates, I mean, they viewed that as a loss because there was this push all session to try to get full legalization of marijuana. It fell short. You can, and there's a lot of different things you can point to as why that happened, but perhaps the biggest thing is, all six members on Long Island, Senate Democratic members on Long Island, said they were going to vote against it, or said they had concerns. That includes Kevin Thomas, who campaigned on marijuana legalization. And then as the session went on, kind of drifted away, to finally I spoke to him the other day, and he said, well, you know, I needed more protection for law enforcement. I needed to get their sign off before I voted for this. So he was looking for some changes to the vehicle and traffic law. So that was, it was too much to overcome. And there were a couple members from the city that weren't into it, and a couple members from the Westchester suburbs as well. They couldn't overcome that, so they went to Plan B, which was lowering penalties for low-level possession. Essentially, if you have less than 2 ounces, the penalty will be no more than $200.
We talked about this last week. If you're not going to pass this in 2019, you really think you're going to pass this in 2020 in an election year? Color me skeptical on that. That's going to be awfully hard to do. We saw it with the same-sex marriage, right? That passed in 2011. It was not an election year, although there were some ramifications. But I find it very hard to believe they're going to be able to get that passed next year.
We've been talking for about 8 minutes now. I think this is the longest we've gone in a reporter's roundtable in I don't know how long, with the least talk about Governor Andrew Cuomo. Is that indicative of the fact that at least in, you know, in the post-budget half of this session, the governor perhaps was on his back foot a little bit, that you saw him perhaps missing a step, especially in the final weeks of session?
Well, if, you know, throughout his first two terms, the dynamic was Democratic Assembly, Republican Senate, and Democratic governor. And he was able, masterfully at times, to play those sides off of each other to get what he wants, to get his priorities. You had the different dynamic here where you did have a very good working relationship between Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who's the Senate Democratic leader, and Carl Hastie, who's the Assembly Democratic leader. And they worked together to negotiate bills, to pass bills, perhaps that the governor wasn't quite comfortable with. And put those in front of them. So, it really played out with the green light bill, the driver's license bill, because the governor, the day that the Senate passed it, he threatened to veto it. You know, he all of a sudden came up with these concerns about, creating a quote-unquote database of undocumented immigrants that the feds could use. And that has been a concern by some, but the governor hadn't really raised that until the last couple days, and then threatened to veto the bill. He ultimately signed it, but that's a story for another day.
He made outreach to Barbara. Underwood said that his office wanted a legal opinion, and Barbara Underwood essentially stayed silent. Instead, the response came from Attorney General Letitia James, who said, yeah, we've looked at this, it's fine.
And Cuomo said, based on the representation of the AG and the Solicitor General, that they can win this case, I will sign the bill and hope they are right, which was an unusual statement. But you talk about this, it's remarkable. I mean, there were no celebratory press conferences after some of these big pieces of legislation. We didn't even see Governor Cuomo this week. And over the course of the last couple months, it's really amazing to see some of these Democrats in the Senate really pushing back hard and just outright criticizing the governor on Twitter, from Gustavo Rivera, Jessica Ramos in Queens, something we haven't seen in during Governor Cuomo's time.
And you know, one thing the governor did say this week and has said in the past that turned out to be very true is, he said he was pushing for marijuana legalization in the state budget.
Yeah.
And that did fall out of the budget. Lawmakers said, well, we can deal with this on our own.
See, I told you.
He was right in that it faced a better chance of passage in the budget when all these items are linked in, and then, you know, it fell out and ultimately didn't end up happening.
We should note, we're talking Friday morning. There could be still a kumbaya, yeah, red room, right, press conference at some point, but I wouldn't put a lot of chips on it down at the one of those new casinos. We've got 30 seconds left. So, John, I'll give it to you. What's on deck for 2020 that was left on the board by the end of this session?
I would bring up two issues. One is marijuana legalization, and that might be something that, again, you see come up in budget talks because lawmakers won't want to take a vote in an election year on it. And the other is gestational surrogacy. That is, it was a major priority of Andrew Cuomo's. He pushed to try to allow women to be paid to carry a gay or infertile couple's baby to term. New York does not allow that. It didn't end up happening in part because of pushback from women in the assembly who didn't like that bill. That's something that'll come up again next year.
Carl Hastie said, listen, this has kind of dropped on us at the last second. A lot of my members are uncomfortable with it, so we're going to wait a little bit. And yeah, that's something that could legitimately pass in 2020.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. Thanks very much to John Campbell for great analysis at the end of a very tough week. And we are out of time. Next week, don't miss our interview with the outgoing SUNY chairman and still highest-ranking African-American elected official here in New York, Carl McCall.
Now, you've been a prominent African-American figure for decades.
Yes.
There's been a lot of progress in your lifetime.
Also,
a lot of setbacks. Where do you think things stand now?
At the state level, I think we're doing very well. You know, you've got an African-American head of the assembly. You've got an African-American female who is the majority leader in the Senate. We've got an African-American attorney general. I mean, I think what we have now is people who have taken advantage of other people who have come before them and have shown, you know, when I ran, the fact that no African-American had held a statewide office. I held a statewide office. I think I performed well enough so people felt that, you know, why not?
We send you off today with footage from the shores of Lake Champlain. For my partner, Matt Ryan, I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Thanks for watching, and we hope to see you next time on New York Now.